We are back with another iteration of the Comedy Fix podcast. Here we are. This week, this episode, this time, this hour that you're listening to us, we're going to be talking about believability. The concept of believability. Do you need it? What does that even really fucking mean? I have a lot of questions for Chris because I know he's our believability proponent, and I really have no idea where Sam's going to land on this. Chris, I'm here with Chris and Sam, by the way, BT Dubs, and I'm Jamie. Chris, do you mind giving us some context for this conversation since you're the big believability fan?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, by the way. I just love being here on this podcast with you guys. Believability, I just love this topic. There's a lot to it. Just briefly, there's an exercise that we'll do in class sometimes in my level 601 at the Westside Comedy Theater. And the exercise goes like this. Two people up, do a scene. Everybody else who's watching, at any point when they don't believe something, they get to shout out, "I don't believe you." And then we stop the scene and we discuss what went wrong or what wasn't believable. And I always make it very clear. This is not about like being a dick or shouting out shit. It's just like, if there's a moment that something strikes you as not being believable, let's discuss it. And here's what we find that things oftentimes are unbelievable. One, a character choice. They go, based on all the things this character has said and done, I didn't believe they would say this or do that. So that's one of them, right? Like, this person said they love going to church and they pray every day. It didn't make sense that then they would murder this person in cold blood. For instance, that's a fucking dumb example. But they might feel that a point of view has been shifted. Also believability of like something as small as like the world, objects within the space. You walked through the table that you had set up, right? You got into that car a weird way. Somebody wouldn't drive and not stare at where they're driving. They're talking to the person the whole time. That feels unbelievable to me. So, and everything in between, those are the two extremes. And if I can say one last thing, I had one person in my class who's such a great person and a great performer. She was never very believable in her character work. It always felt like a caricature. And I remember one time I just thought of this. It wasn't anything brilliant, but I said, "Hey, everybody sit down. You, can I get you on stage?" The person was having a hard time being believable. I said, can you just pantomime what it might look like putting a dollar into a vending machine? I don't know why I came up with that example. I just wanted to see her be so grounded in reality. No performance, no being on. Just, can I see what that looks like? And when she did it, everyone was like, whoa, because we hadn't gotten that from her yet as a performer. We hadn't gotten just being believable. And last thing before we go off, I always say this. If I can't believe that you can make a cup of tea on stage and just like have a conversation, then I'm not going to believe you when you want to be the dragon who is in love with the squid in the universe made of marshmallows. I think a believability needs to exist there as well. So I like to slow all my students down, bring them all down. Just have a conversation, a believable conversation. Let's go.
What does believable mean?
Well,
what do you mean by that? Like, you're able to successfully suspend disbelief, or does it mean that the character is consistent? Like, what exactly does believable mean to you?
That's a great question, because I don't know that I can answer, because it feels like all of the above. In the previous episode, we talked about when an audience knows what an audience can feel, whether or not a performer is making an inspired move versus just making a move for the move's sake. I think believability also lives in that area of there's a rhythm, there's a flow. That sounds so crazy. But I can feel, I can almost hear the cadence of a person or their character. I can feel when they're out of rhythm, when they've become unbelievable. I don't know. Sam, you know what I mean. I need help, Sam. You're here.
I've been here the whole time. Chris, I think you do such a great job setting this up, because I was trying to think about how I felt about believability, and it's, I don't know yet. And Jamie, I think you bring up a good question of what do we mean by it? Because there is the believability of a performance that I believe you are that person. There's also like the believability in a scene of like, can there be dragons? But I think a dragon scene can be believable. It's when the performer, I think, believes in it themselves, and we get that sort of authenticity. And this feels very like Stanislavski method acting, where you want to be the person. And I always laugh that improv is an art form based on mime. I think it's the funniest thing. One of my favorite times in a show, I had to dig something out, and I knew that there was a shovel backstage. And so instead of digging with a fake shovel, I went backstage and brought out a real shovel. It broke a little bit of the show believability, but it was really fun to sort of not have to believe in a mime thing for a second. But I think this is such a great question. And I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of in the middle on this, and that sometimes I care about believability and sometimes I don't, but I don't know what the difference is. So this will be a good talk.
Yeah, boy, oh boy. All right. Yeah, you guys aren't giving me a lot to work with here.
Well, I don't think it's always necessary. I think you can do things.
So what's the consequence of not having believability? Let's talk about the converse. Again, it's not believable. Now what? You don't believe that that person is really putting a dollar in a vending machine. So what?
Well, I think it goes to the type of performance style you're aiming to do. So in my class, or in my current classes, where believability is of the utmost importance, if I don't believe that you could put, I don't believe you're putting the dollar in the vending machine, then I don't believe anything else you say, and ultimately leaves me not giving a fuck. And I think that is important to me. I want to give a fuck when I watch these scenes that I'm doing now. And that, listen, I know that there's the other show. We had Ithamar Enriquez on. He does Delicious Moments. There's no believability in their performance. As a matter of fact, they're constantly breaking each other and breaking rules and contradicting each other. And that's fine. And that's fun. For the style I like is that when you say, hey, Jenny, I'm in love with you. I want to fucking believe that. I want to believe that. And I think that we need to recognize that there shouldn't, for me at least, there isn't much of a difference between an actor and an improviser. So that's the same thing. Sometimes people think that they're just improvising. So they come on stage doing their impression of what they think a fucking postal worker looks like, or what they think somebody at a diner would say, hey, you're looking for some pie or whatever the fuck. You know what I mean? Slow it down. Shut the fuck up. Think about what you're saying. Let me believe you. Let you believe you. And you know what? Here's what happens when it goes well. The scene's over and both performers go, holy shit. Oh, that felt great. Oh, I was in it. You know, I felt these things. To me, that's important. For me, not for every show, not for every improv scene that exists. I'm sure there's diaper prov somewhere, right? That's fine. But for me, that's important. It means something to me. And it's the work I've wanted to do my whole life. And I didn't know that. Is fucking having real believable moments. I just keep saying the word believable, but not actually answering what believable is.
So, but if I can read a pattern into what you've said so far, it seems like when you say believable, you mean something that has maybe some kind of emotional relatability. The emotions in the scene are something that you can connect with, or that you can understand or empathize with, or something in that realm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I can imagine the waitress at the diner who's like, hey, baby, let me give you some pie.
Yeah.
But if she like, if her husband just died and she's like, oh, shit. I don't know. If she like had the emotion in that same weird caricature.
You're right. If she made that, if that character made that switch as the pie slanging waitress. Yes, I'm good with that. I'm good with that. Like keeping within that. I think that's fine. Dang, I had more to say. Sam, I think you had something to say too.
Well, I just love the game of like every pie flavor makes her think of her dead husband, and so she starts crying. And the apple pie, oh, it's great. I love that game. I mean, it's so interesting to think that our baseline, Chris, from what you're saying, is to believe the believable, right? Even if it's not very emotional, I want to believe that you can make a cup of tea. Just Just make that believable. And I think I agree with you there, but one of my coaches, Jen Kruger, had this thing of like, does it have to be Los Angeles 2021? Like, can the scene be set anywhere else? And so I think there's also...
I say that all the time, Sam. Sorry absolutely. To interrupt.
Look, yeah. Many coaches will say it, but there's also, there's believe the believable, and that's our minimum, right? And what we want to get to, I think, is I want you to make me believe the unbelievable. Like, make me really feel like you're that dragon. And yeah, I don't know if we can put our hands on what that is, but it's like, I think it goes to some of the stuff of like being focused and in the zone and just sort of like believing that you're this dragon in that moment. And I think sometimes improv isn't the best art form for this because like when you're waving your arms in the air, you can get a little whooshy.
Sure. But I'm forcing it. I'm forcing this to be the art form for believability. And I'll tell you where it's worked the best, or I haven't tried it elsewhere, but Zoom has been a beautiful place to try this because I started doing workshops through Zoom when everything happened and I wasn't focused on the believability so much just yet. And then I realized, well, it's weird to do object and space work through a little screen. Can I just have two people talk to each other as characters? And holy crap, now it's been a year later. Some of these scenes, people are like crying and like, and I, you know, I love that. I've always wanted that in a scene. And I don't mean from that dirtbag college theater professor who was like, tell me all your deep secrets. I just mean like, it's fun to watch people like give a shit and actually emote. But at the same token, we're having just nice conversations, some slice of life scenes where people are just like talking about like their money problems or dating. And it's just, to me, it's just so fulfilling. And one last thing I want to say here. Some of the stuff I'm doing feels like some wax on, wax off stuff. Leading up to like, here's what I'm saying. They're not mutually exclusive. The idea of being believable, like believability as a performance way versus like, fuck, I can't say this. What I'm trying to say is if you want to go do heavy premise style improv, or you want to do even short form, I'll use short form for an example, where it's quick, big games. I still think the wax on, wax off philosophy of believability and these learning these muscles will serve you there as well. I think you can blow it up where it doesn't just have to exist in a scene with two people crying. You can blow it up to a big stage where you're singing a song about pumpkins. I think it translates there.
I so want to see that. I love all of Chris's examples of like lame improv things are always so great. It's always like a dragon falling in love with a squid in a marshmallow universe. I'm like, I would love to see that. And then it's dancing pumpkins. I'm like, I want to see that too. I love all of his demeaning examples. They get me excited. But okay, so believability. My problem is approaching this topic is that for me, I don't know if I'm hyper cynical or what, but I have never seen an improv show where I actually believed anything that was happening on stage. I am always aware that I'm watching a show. I'm never so enraptured in the characters crying about their divorce that I'm always aware that I'm watching a show. So believability to me is like, well, but I can still enjoy a show, even though I completely don't believe anything that's happening. And so I don't know. I have a hard time.
Jamie, I did a show. I did a web series in 2016, I believe, called 7P10E, 7 Pacific, 10 Eastern, with my friend Avital Ash. It was like a pretty successful little web series, all things considered. But part of the deal was it was about a guy and a girl meeting online and having conversations over Skype. People who were watching this, because we would release it every day at 7 Pacific, 10 Eastern for the whole month of January, there was discussions in the chats. They didn't know whether this is real or not. Are we actually watching two people meet? Have they chosen to do this live? I love that. I love that. And I credit that to the believability of our acting and the way we related with each other. All of our lines were improvised. I mean, we had a outline, you know, beat, but for the most part it was improvised. I love, to me, that's just so important. It's also such a small facet, I think, of the way we watch improvisation. So I don't think it's a very popular opinion the way I do it, though everybody who comes to my class and tries it fucking, they like it. I think people don't know that this is what they've been needing.
Well, I mean, even if the acting on stage of an improv show is good, even if I would consider the acting good and they seem committed and all the other stuff, I never believe they're driving a car. I don't believe that they're husband and wife. I just don't believe that. Because I just know that it's not.
Do you believe that when you watch a movie?
Yeah, that's why I don't like movies. That's really probably why I don't like watching, and I can't watch theater, and I can't watch musicals. Because I'm like, all of a sudden, everybody can sing and dance the same number in the middle of the street. These are all a bunch of strangers in the middle of an Italian villa.
I love musicals.
I want to smash my face through the table. I don't know. Yeah. I can't do it because I'm just like, and maybe that's just a me thing. That's just a me thing.
I think it is a you thing. Musicals are pretty popular.
But are they believable? That's the thing. It's like, no one believes that they all know how to sing and dance. Like, to me, that's like Sam going to get backstage to get a shovel. It's like a moment where we're saying to the audience, hey, this isn't real because it's impossible.
It's the expectation. You sign a contract when you buy the ticket on Ticketmaster. You're actually literally signing a contract that says you're about to enter a world where we're going to believe different rules. But even there's still rules within there. And talk to us, Sam. You're in this podcast.
Well, that's why they call it the suspension of disbelief, right? It's like we're supposed to disbelieve that people can sing like that, and we have to suspend that and kind of believe in this world. And like, I don't think Jamie is as unpopular in his opinion as maybe he could be. I think there are a lot of people who don't like musicals. I think there are a lot of people who prefer stuff that does feel real in different ways. I don't know. It's interesting because I'm trying to think of it outside of just improv. And I'll go to stand-ups, right? Like, for a lot of stand-ups, I believe the story they're telling me. Like, I know that it's getting tweaked a little bit, but, like, a lot of times, really good stuff feels authentic and it's really believable. And I don't know if we can get beyond understanding what it is beyond just sort of saying, like, it's authentic and the person who's saying it thinks it's true. But, like, I don't know if there's more to it than that. I can't really figure out what this believability is.
I like that, though, Sam, that this person who's saying it believes it's true. I think that's good for a stand-up because I bartended at the West Side Comedy Theater for 7 years. I think it was 7 years. I saw a lot of bad stand-up, a lot of open mics where somebody would be telling a story and then you go, that part's not true. That there's no fucking way. And like you could tell they manipulated it for the bit. Mm. Now the person who's doing it believing it's true to me also exists in the improv scene where even if the character is absurd, they have a philosophy that they believe in that makes it true to them. Right? Does that make sense? So mm-hmm. even if it's an absurd move or an absurd way to view the world, the character believes it's true to them. Based on a philosophy that you can just make up on the spot.
Yeah.
Jamie's not buying this.
I don't know. To me, it's all just made up. And it's obvious that it's made up. If I walk, if Chris and you and I are in a scene and I'm like, hey, Dad, can you hand me the wrench? None of that is believable. But because how can I authentically feel that you're my dad handing me a wrench? How can I believe I'm authentically saying based on Sam's definition?
You don't believe that people are husband and wives in plays or movies. I don't know how to even have the conversation to be like, yeah, you're right. Like,
because there is a certain amount of believability when things I think happen on stage that are real. Those moments where we see the actors behind the characters. I think those moments are real, you know, like we talked about in the previous episode, the idea of pimps, you know, whether you can sing or hop on one foot for the rest of the show, that's going to be a real believable moment, I think, because if you're actually trying to, we're going to see your struggle of trying to hop for the rest of the show. Like that's something real and believable. I can try to get behind that a little bit more as opposed to you do that because your grandpa was a pirate, you know, in which case I'm like, okay, whatever.
But you don't believe it anyway. You don't believe that Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet were in love on the Titanic. So it's hard.
Well, do you?
We're not going to be able to convince you.
This is important for people to know about Jamie, because I actually do think there's part of this that Jamie can sink his teeth into. And Jamie, for like a while, you were kind of playing with like deconstructing the mime work in scenes where instead of maybe just sort of doing it as realistically as possible, you were sort of giving an expressionist simplified take on it. So for example, putting a dollar into the machine, maybe you would have just like smacked the front of the machine and that was your version of giving the machine a dollar. But you would do it with sort of this authentic belief that that's how this world works. Right. And so isn't there a little bit of believability in that when you create a bit or a game of something, you kind of have to believe that that's how things are done. Right. We've tried to push the walls, right? All right, let's move the walls. We have to believe that we can move the walls in order for that bit to work. The second where we're like, we can't move these walls, but we're going to try to push them anyways, we've lost the believability of it.
Well, I remember what I know what you're talking about with the expressionist stuff, and I do like that. But I like that because it's so absurd that it doesn't even try to be believable, which I think is kind of believable. It's not believable, but it's something that I can sink my teeth into, maybe, because it's so unrealistic but I'm doing it anyway, that it's like, oh, they're not even trying to be believable. That's just how this universe operates in this world. But no one has to believe that I'm putting a dollar in a vending machine, you know? So like, believability to me doesn't really come into the equation. It's almost like our vulnerability conversations. Like, you can have it, but that's not what a performance is about. A performance is, I mean, God, what is a performance? But I'm saying the converse. I'm saying that you don't need believability to have successful, beautiful, interesting, thought-provoking, emotionally moving work for the audience. Believability is not what I'm going to hang my hat on. It can be there, but it can also not be there. And so if it cannot be there, then it doesn't really matter. That's kind of my process of reasoning.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't need to be there for every form of art to be meaningful. But that's where I'm hanging my hat right now. I spent 20 fucking years doing it a different way, and I always felt compelled and pulled this way. It feels good to me. It feels good to me in the work I'm seeing. When a scene fucking ends on Zoom, Jamie, when a fucking Zoom scene ends, and everyone goes, holy shit. And we talked to the actors. What was your experience in there? How'd you feel in there? Fuck, I was just this and I was that. To me, that's very satisfying. And like, not only is it satisfying, Jamie, it feels like important to me. You know, who gives a shit? Maybe it's not important to anybody else. Frankly, there's not a ton of dramatic improv. I know it exists. I know there's some subgenres of it. But like, I don't know if anybody would ever come see it. I kind of think they would. I think it would be great to do, you know, a fully improvised play that's just dramatic with these moments where we give a fuck and everything's going in there. But I know what you're saying, Jamie. I can just as easily be like, yeah, but that doesn't matter. And you're right. It doesn't have to happen. It just feels really good to me in there. It's a good space. And like I was saying earlier, I think everybody could benefit from it's just like, it's just another tool, perhaps, like you said, Jamie. It doesn't always need to be there, but physicality or mask work and everything in between, I think there is room for the believability course when it comes to performance. Jamie, sorry, I'm gonna jump in one more time. You guys have done shows or we've done rehearsals where you're doing your expressionist version of smashing a fucking dollar into a vending machine. And then, and you know this, then you'll have a beautiful, what I consider a beautiful scene with Sam about something that's maybe a little more personal or real. And you know, I love those moments. I think there's room for both at the table. And I just think those are nice moments. And you know, the moments I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about, dude.
I do know what you're talking about. I'm just trying to think if their success relies on believability. I don't know. I get caught up on the fact that I never believe anything that I'm seeing on an improv stage. And so I love tough. Improv. I love watching tough. Improv shows. So there's some disconnect for me there. Because I never believe that, you know, you're a dragon flapping your hands around like an idiot. I just, I like you. I think I like the meta thing, the meta concept of you trying to do that, of you trying to convince me of it, of you trying your best. It's like the comedy of someone who's in a terrible disguise. That's funny. And it's almost like kind of the same thing. It's just not believable. But the fact that you're trying so hard to make me believe something that I know is not believable is the joke of the scene. I don't know. I've never been emotionally moved by an improv scene. Just it's mm-hmm. never happened.
Go to chris-alvarado.com for classes.
Jamie, we've done work with puppets, and I'm curious how you see maybe believability in puppetry, because I think a lot of people like watching puppets and, again, sort of suspending that disbelief and thinking that's a real thing with its own characteristics. And so I'm just sort of curious, how is it the lack of believability that makes puppetry so fun, or how do those ideas relate for you?
I think puppetry, specifically, you and I have done a lot of marionette stuff. I think the puppetry invites viewers to tap into their childlike selves, no matter what their age is. They're invited to kind of be innocent for a minute. And so when they're innocent, they can put aside their cynicism, their judgments, because they're looking at puppets, not people. You know, it's hard to judge a puppet, right? What does that even really mean? And so I think that can disarm audience members in a way that live human performance can't. And I think puppets might be able to access the gushy side of a audience member more so than an improv show can. Does that make sense? Does that register?
It does. But I mean, I think this is maybe some common ground between you and Chris, because when you sort of say, like, lose the cynicism, see things through innocence, like, I think that's the trick, right? How can we convince the audience to see this for what we're saying it is in some way? So it's interesting. I think there is a problem with cynicism and believability, right? Like, you can't watch something and be cynical about it and still kind of believe in it, if that makes sense.
I think, and I maybe I'm just a naturally very cynical person, that wouldn't probably surprise any listener who's listened to all these episodes, but I think that, and you know, puppets don't make me feel anything either, but I just speaking what I think they do to the psychology of the audience, is I think they invite them to, they encourage people to get on board. Or maybe it's kind of like what you were saying, is it's so unbelievable that this little stick of wood with, you know, a cloth on and strings attached to its limbs is believable, that people don't even try to challenge the believability of it. You know, it's so absurd, it's so far away from reality, that it actually makes it easier to believe, because it's not even trying to, because when it's trying to, then your bullshit meter goes up. You know, it would be stupid to have a bullshit meter when you're watching a puppet, right? It doesn't even make any sense.
It's the uncanny valley of animation, right? Where animation that tries to look real looks strange to us, whereas like animation that is kind of purposefully cartoony is easier for us to accept.
I think there's something to that.
I was thinking about animation, actually, Sam. You know, I feel like Pixar movies are like known for pulling these emotions from us, from the child to the adult in the room, and everyone in between is just they're caught up in the story and the stuff, and people cry at the end of the movie Up and all the stuff. And I think that's what I'm getting at, is that, and you said it here, it's just one little word difference, Sam. It's believe in, not just believe. I don't give a, of course you don't fucking believe that I'm married to this robot on stage, but can you believe in the emotions we're portraying? Can you believe in the message we're trying to say? Can you believe in for this moment at this theater in an alley in Santa Monica, can you believe in the moments that we are portraying for you? I'm just coming up with this now, obviously, because I understand what you're saying, Jamie, but, and even with like the musical stuff, I'm like, I love musicals so much. I don't believe everyone can do that, but I think it's like if they are good enough, then it allows me to believe in the moment. Believe in, yeah, I don't know. Is that weird?
I mean,
not in. You're not in.
No, I'm not in. I'm not nodding.
When were you moved by something?
When was I moved by something? Oh my God.
You know, a commercial, a play, a TV show.
Oh, that Google commercial. Every time that Google commercial makes me cry. The dead mom. Ugh. Kid goes to college. Ugh. I believe
it. What do you mean? Yes. And they're not real. Those are actors.
It's beautiful.
I mean, if we're talking more broadly about psychology and storytelling, then, you know, the story is just a vessel for you to explore your own life, right?
Right?
That Google commercial. Wait. You're not crying at that Google commercial. You're crying at your own relationship with your mom.
Maybe
you didn't cry, but you get emotional about your own relationship with your parent.
I cry every time. It's because I miss my mom.
Call your mom after this podcast, Sam.
Sunday.
Is that the day you're allowed to call her?
Yeah. If it's Sunday,
I understand a little bit more now. But I think that's what it is, right? I don't actually believe that, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio froze to death on that wood door. Spoiler alert. But it's a way that you can explore your own relationship with, you know, a lost love of some kind, you know? So it's not that you believe that. It's basically, it just makes you go into your own mind and think about your own life.
But
you don't actually believe what you're watching.
But the performance needs to be good enough to get you to that place where you are able to think about your own life. If it's a wonky performance, you're taken out of the message, at least.
I think so. I think that's true. I've seen poorly acted movies many times, and it does really take you out of it. So I don't know. We're talking about like the psychology of storytelling. But then again, it's not, I don't believe what I'm watching. It just has to be, maybe, I don't know. I really don't know what we're saying here. But when was the last time I was moved? I can't even honestly think of the last time I was moved watching some kind of media, something or other. God, I really don't even know.
It's really sad.
I know. I mean, this was like 15 years ago or whatever, but I remember really being moved by the movie WALL-E. But that was a long time ago.
Great movie. Pixar.
But great movie. That's, yeah, Pixar. That, I know. As, yeah, soon as you said Pixar, I'm like, oh, WALL-E. WALL-E made me feel things. I really liked the little robot. But it wasn't because I believed anything about it. It's just like, oh, I can relate to like the little loner weirdo character, you know? So it's like, you find yourself in the films, but I don't believe anything that I'm watching. So it's not really believability.
Again, Jamie, you kind of like pause on this thing when you were trying to make the same point earlier. I feel like you can't think about your own stories in life if the performance isn't good enough. And to me, the believability comes from a good performance will give you the believability enough for you to then consider your own life.
I think there's something there, but I just don't think believability is it. I think it's, I don't know. I don't know what the word would be, you know, cause I don't know. I really don't know. Yeah, but believability doesn't strike me as what's going on there.
Please go ahead, Sam.
I was just gonna say, like, how can we expand the idea a little bit more? Because to me, like, authenticity gets caught up into it a little bit. But go ahead.
Well,
authenticity, I think, is maybe a step on the way to believability. You know, they're not the same thing, but it's like on the path, because I think a lot about clown shows, because clowns really try to, in a lot of instances, really connect to some kind of authenticity, some real emotion, some real feeling in the room. And so some clown shows can be very, very powerful and moving. But a lot of times, again, when I sense a performer trying to be authentic, but not really being authentic, then it immediately puts me off. And I feel like I get that a lot. So maybe authenticity is a step on the way to believability. But again, I don't know how to untangle all these different concepts. What were you going to say, Chris?
Well, now like nine things, but even just this last point here, where when you feel the performer like trying, it pulls you out. That's what we're doing in my classes. Discussing what that moment was. And listen, Maybe you're right, Jamie. Maybe the fucking word isn't believability. I mean, I spent 6 years at a community college. I don't have the greatest vocabulary. There's a lot of things I don't know. But I am talking about the fucking feeling. I know cuss hurts. I am talking about the fucking feeling that I either get or don't get from a performance. And it seems to correlate with the feeling that the performer gets or doesn't get in their own performance as well. And that is what I'm calling the believability. It could be authenticity. I find that a lot of this work goes back to knowing of self, right? Like, do you know who you are? That's a whole fucking other thing. So yeah, there's all that. But one more thing I want to say is I brought up this exercise way when we first started, the I don't believe you exercise. Do you think, Jamie, if you watched 5 scenes, that there might be places where you would say I don't believe you versus places where you wouldn't say I don't believe you? And when you're not saying I don't believe you, is that because you might believe in the moment that they're portraying? Or would you immediately, as soon as they were like, hi, you go, I don't believe you.
Yeah. I think I might be more in that latter camp where as soon as they sit down and grab a fake cup, I'm like, oh, it's just not believable. Don't even try. I guess maybe that's kind of where I am as a performer, is I just don't even anticipate that anything that I do will be believable. It's not even a factor in my performance. I'm just going to do what I feel inspired to do. And hopefully that inspiration will read to the audience as something that they can get on board with.
Well, here's what I think is odd, Jamie, is that my dad, he's from Honduras. He's from the jungles of Honduras, hasn't seen a movie since Ninja Turtles in 1989, I think it was, he saw with me. It's the last movie he saw. He doesn't like movies. He doesn't even like TV shows. He likes the news and like some cartoons. He likes some cartoons. And I was like, Dad, why don't you, here, Dad, I have all these great movies, or let's go see these movies. I don't care about that stuff. I don't care. And I think part of him is like, he's like, I don't want to see like a grown man like pretend to be whatever the fuck, a cowboy or something. But so he's somebody in my life that has never really cared about performance, probably doesn't believe in what the fuck's going on. But he's not also, unlike you, he doesn't try to, he's not in the fucking performing arts, right? He's a truck driver and then that's it. Or, you know, he's more than truck driver. But like, it's funny that you're like, I don't believe shit. I never believed anything. Also, I do this performing art. That to me is where this is interesting, because I'm sure there's a lot of people like my dad who don't believe it. What do you mean? That's people make it pretend. They don't like plays, right? So I get it that I'm on one end of the spectrum. Like, oh, I fucking love a college fucking black box production where they're trying shit. You know, I want that. So I get that's not for everybody. But you, though, are actually still performing. So that's interesting.
Yeah, for me, I try to, when I'm performing, I like to really have real moments where there's not really any acting required. It's a real physical moment where I'm at, in that moment, physically challenged by whatever the task is, or intellectually, I'm very intellectually trying my best to figure this out and to move these pieces around. And I think there's no acting required. I'm genuinely there on stage trying to do this puzzle then and there.
So that's a big part of it. No acting required.
Yeah.
There's a lot of actors on television and film who are known for just doing them. And then there are some more character actors, right? I just saw True Romance last night for the first time. Gary Oldman is in that. Where that he's like a known character actor. But so he is acting. But Jamie, that's interesting. So I'm actually trying to get my students to the point of no acting required as well. And I do agree with that. I don't need to see them pretend, like, do your best at being an old man. Fuck, I don't know what I'm trying to say here. There is something about what you just said about no acting required that I like, except the fact that you are up on a stage doing it, Jamie.
But it's a performance. It's not acting to me. I don't think of myself as an actor. That's why a few episodes ago, we talked about the labels we're going to put on improv.
Yeah, sure. But whether you think of yourself as an actor or not, a passerby was going to say, there's a stage, there's an audience, and there's an actor on that stage. So, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
But that's the thing. That's what drives me crazy when I hear like people, the improv wisdom of play to the top of your intelligence. I'm like, I don't fucking believe any of that. Like, you think that that person's actually your dad? Like, what does that mean? Play to the top of your character's intelligence? Like, I, all these, that it's one of those kind of improv truisms that I'm like, I don't even really understand how you would apply that in any kind of real way. People just are like, oh, okay, play to top of your intelligence. Yeah. What does that mean? Just don't play like you have an intellectual disability?
No, they're saying whatever character you're playing, make them the smartest they can be, because we don't want to see people being doofuses.
But what does that mean? Make your character as smart as they can be. What does that even mean?
Yeah, what do you mean? What I mean? Well, if it's a, yeah, Sam, you talk. You talk. Sam,
yeah, you be the middleman here.
I think part of it is, you know, in our clown work, especially when we've talked about coming up with the impossible task.
Mm-hmm.
We. The Explain only way to people the impossible task is sort of a clown concept of like, we're going to tell the audience that we're going to do something that is impossible to do and we know it. And sort of the more impossible, the better. I think I already mentioned sort of the idea of like, we're going to move the walls 3 feet back. I'm just going to push the walls 3 feet back. And we're going to try it to the best of our ability, to the top of our intelligence, so to say. Now, we're sort of skipping the part of intelligence where we know we can't actually push walls with our bare hands. But besides that, we're going to think about the problem and sort of say, oh, well, if this side doesn't work, maybe it's the other side. Oh, maybe we need a running start. Like, oh, maybe we should push the ground. Like all of those things we have to be intelligent about, even though they're kind of dumb. And we, as the performers there, have to have something inside of us that says like, we can do this. And so, you know, I don't want to get into like semantics, but when you talk about being inspired, Jamie, I think part of that inspiration is some of what Chris is talking about here. Where if you're not inspired to do it, you don't like buy it.
To me, that's why I would say maybe the word's not believability. I mean, we would just been arguing about definitions this whole time. But to me, that's more authentic. You know, I like authenticity. But that doesn't mean good acting. That means actually something that's real or based on my perception as an audience member that I believe is real. It's not good acting. It's actually something real in that moment. And so it's not, that's why I push back against like, you know, the, I don't know, the two characters arguing about being a bad parent or whatever it is. Cause like, it's not acting. Acting's not it. That's why I hesitate and don't go to the believability sphere. It's authenticity. I want to see that something real is happening with these people, and I don't want them to pretend to be dumb or to pretend to be tricked or to pretend, you know, that they're holding a cup or that the pretend that the breakup is going to happen. You know, like, I don't want to see that. Like, I don't know. It's just, again, I don't have the articulation of what it is, but I do think authenticity, a real kind of authenticity, not just good acting, a real kind of authenticity is what I'm looking for.
I like feel real as sort of part of this expanding definition. I feel like Chris could maybe get on board with like believability and feeling real as maybe being like cousins in some way.
I mean, maybe that's what I'm asking of my students and of myself, to make this performance feel real. Maybe. So yes. So maybe believability is the wrong word, because I know there's a guy named Jamie who won't believe that you're actually married, guys. So sorry, but we're still going to do this play anyway.
Why?
Well, the only thing he asks is that maybe we can...
Why would you do that play if no one's going to believe it? Unless no, that's Jamie. The point of the play.
No, hold on, just Jamie. I didn't say people. I said, there's a guy named Jamie who's coming to the play. He's not going to believe you two are husband and wife. But maybe the best we can do for him, because I like this guy, is maybe we can make it feel real. Maybe we can make it feel real. And then they go like, well, we think we're actually married. I'm like, well, you're crazy. You're not married. Jamie knows that. You two are nuts. But I'm the director, you know? I say, just for this performance, can we make this feel real? And they go, okay. And then and maybe that's what we're going for, Jamie.
But let me ask you, it's kind of interesting because sometimes married actors do play married, right? Like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, right? Elizabeth Taylor and the other guy. They had like a real relationship, right? Richard Burton, I think that's him. And like, is there anything added by that? I'm curious. When we watch Schitt's Creek and we know that Eugene Levy is Dan Levy's father and they're playing father and son, that it does give us a little extra tingle, I think, for some reason.
Let me jump in on this because I've watched Schitt's Creek and I don't care for it. And because because I just, because you want to know why? Because literally it's lack of believability. I can't sink my teeth into anything. So the, and I didn't know that they were, I didn't know that they were son and father. I didn't know that. So to me, that obviously didn't add anything because I find the whole show just too, I can't sink my teeth into it. I can't relate to any of it.
Jamie, I feel the same way.
Thank you.
What? About,
thank you. What? Can we kick Sam off this podcast now?
So, oh my gosh. Well,
best comedy of the last 5 years. Then what we do on the shows?
Everybody that I love and respect, including my own fiance, loves the show. So when I try to watch it on my own before I even kind of knew what it was, I just like found it. I was like, this is crazy. And I like them individually. I like Catherine O'Hara. I like Eugene Levy. It wasn't for me. Because of the same reason you're saying, Jamie. I have seen other episodes since because it's been on my home a bunch. And okay, I can kind of get into it. I can kind of, okay, this is that type of show. It's more of a cartoon for me. Do you know what I mean? I got to put on the different hat or put on the different lens to watch the show. But I agree with you, Jamie. It wasn't because there wasn't anything to sink your teeth into. Now, if you come watch my improv scenes, baby, you're going to be able to sink your teeth into this shit, okay? And when somebody puts a fucking dollar in that vending machine, you're going to be like, that feels real.
It won't be funny. But.
Oh, don't get me started with that. That's a whole fucking thing. Rarely funny. And I wonder what that is. And we can't get into it now. But the idea of, like, to me, some of the most believable scenes have a hard time being funny.
I don't know. I don't know that that's true.
I'm not asking you for your opinion. I'm telling you how I feel.
Well, when you tell me how you feel, you're implicitly asking for my opinion in my world.
So tell me why it's not true that I don't think that.
Because I'm sure there are scenes that were real that you found funny. Because, sure. You know.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
I'm saying rarely. I'm not okay. Saying always. Rarely. Okay. Rarely.
Well, possibly a good topic for another episode.
I mean, I'm rarely like cracking up going like, oh my God, this is so like, I really relate. I mean, actually, maybe in stand-up comedy where somebody's being real and sharing a real anecdote or story, that's when I can relate. But if it's like, I don't know. I don't even watch a lot of comedies, but I'm thinking of like Will Ferrell coming off the top of my head. When I watched him in like, I watched Elf recently for this past holiday season for the first time. Really charming and funny movie. I don't find that believable at all. I mean, not just the Santa Claus thing, but I mean, even just the... Anyway.
Yeah. I don't know if that's me or not. Well, I'll fix it.
I don't know if it's me either.
Okay, it's okay.
Well, I'll edit it out. Well, so I guess what I can get on board with is... authenticity. I like Sam's attempt to kind of like pry open that definition a little bit more with it feels real. And maybe I'm just particularly a cynical audience member. Maybe other audience members can suspend disbelief a little bit more easily. And maybe that's fine. I'm not going to tell anybody how to enjoy a show, but I'm just going to say for my money, it's like, I don't even try to believe an improv show. I'm just there to watch the hijinks. I want to see if the performers can surprise me, if they have something original to show me, you know, if they can outsmart one another, if they can, you know, do something, just a feat that's impressive, you know, if someone just walks on their hands the rest of the show, like I'm going to enjoy that show, even though I don't believe that they used to be an acrobat and Cirque du Soleil and their dad now forced them to do this for his love. I'm not going to believe that, but I want to watch somebody try to do a handstand for 20 minutes. So I don't know. So I go to improv shows to look for other things and I find that enjoyable. I certainly don't go for believability or authenticity.
I try. Yeah. Wrapping up here. When I go to an improv show, I want to believe in it. Am I saying that right? You know, I'm hoping that the performers do a good job being as real as possible. That's why I like moves when done well, like scene painting. I like the idea of kind of getting lost in this world that we're making up right here on the spot. I think when done well, it's beautiful. And, I don't know. I don't care about the physical feats necessarily. Now, I guess it's just preference, maybe not as much, or if I'm going to the physical feat show, then yeah, maybe I want to see that. But I think I think when it's all said and done, if I was in one of those, like, where they bring you in, they ask you questions about certain, what are those called?
Podcast?
Like, no, like a survey. I guess, you know, like, I get what, I guess what I, what gets me is yeah, I want to believe. But again, like Sam said, and maybe like you said, Jamie, maybe it's the idea of I want things to feel more real.
Okay. Okay. I can accept that more than believability. Yeah. I will excoriate you less for that.
I don't know what that works.
I think it's interesting that maybe it's a flavor, right? And we can kind of choose how much of it we want to have at times, because I think sometimes I enjoy when I know it's not believable, but I think a lot of the times the problem is that it doesn't feel believable enough, if that makes sense. But like, I enjoy some improv or some stand-up where it feels like they're doing a cartoon character on stage. Like, I think that can be super fun too.
It can too. To me, those moments are great because it's the actor perform, or it's the performer character difference, where the character is doing some big ridiculous, you know, screaming at people like they're a seagull or whatever, because you know that that's hard for that performer to do and that they probably feel stupid doing it. And that's the fun moment for me. It's not that I believe they're a seagull. It's that it's fun to watch them struggle through that.
When the bald guy gets endowed with a lot of hair, classic improv.
But right? also, and I've touched on this before, I think my preference for what I'll just call more real performance or more real improv specifically, I think it comes from my inability to be super funny. I told you this before, and Jamie, you've actually guided me towards this path more than you know it or not, because I would come into some of my rehearsals being like, fuck, I couldn't do this thing at this audition, or I couldn't make this move during the show. And then I'm like, I'm not good enough. And then you'd go, maybe that's just not your thing. Maybe you're trying to force yourself this way. And so this more real approach, what I'm calling that for now, it's an easier point of entry for me, and therefore like feel it's a little more enjoyable, you know, because I'll admit that I'm probably over here because I'm not that funny, but I'm trying to reframe that it's not that I'm not funny, therefore I'm left over here. It's no, I'm good at this. I'm good at what I'm calling the dramatic or the real. That's you know what I mean? It doesn't have to be a failure of one that led me to the other. It's just like, that was never my thing, to be the funniest one on stage.
And I think that's totally valid. And I think people should not try to be good at everything. I think they should find what they're good at and excel. So I love that for you. I would just say that for me as a performer, as somebody who takes classes and stuff, I don't want to be barraged by that note. You know, I want room for unbelievability as well. And so I guess that's my point in this whole podcast, whether or not we agree on the definitions. I want there to always be room for the converse note. If you give a note, I want the other part of that note, the thing that you're not saying, to also be able to work, because I think it can, given the right context. So
agreed.
That's kind of my war on all of these episodes, is like, just the opposite is also true kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we should wrap it up here. This has been informative and stimulating. I appreciate this conversation, you guys. And I don't know if we solved anything or if we figured anything out, but I don't think we ever do, really. We're at The Comedy Fix on Instagram. Please send us a note. We would love, I'm sure, to hear what you're talking about. What conversations are you having with your nerd friends that we should also be having on this conversation and broadcast to however many people decide to listen? We would love to know that. So please send us a line, suggestions for episodes. I can't wait to hear what you guys are talking about. I'm at Jamie Parkinen on Instagram. Sam, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at the Sam Miller. And thank you guys for listening.
You can find me at Chris Alvarado on Instagram. And then what was your outro there, Sam?
Oh, we believe in you.
Yeah.